This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Week zero is here, ladies and gentlemen, and three teams from the Mountain West will be in action, as well as three teams from the ACC. But I thought it would be a great time to bring back on Jonathan Von Tobel. He and I gave you the special Mountain West edition back in July when Mountain West Media Days were here. And of course, you can catch us VSiN Primetime weeknights 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. JVT, if you're unaware and should know this by now, but wrote up the Big 12, the Mountain West, as well as the Pac-2 in our VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which is available now at VSiN.com/subscribe. We've got all sorts of offers out there. So, JVT, welcome back, sir. Fired up to chop it up here on the podcast, even though we do it every single night on VSiN Primetime. But we'll start Big 12, if that works for you, sure. And work our way through. JVT, by the way, does have some thoughts, and maybe we can incorporate it into the Mountain West of one of the Mountain West teams in action in Week 0. But when we look at the odds board right now for the Big 12, Utah and Kansas State have separated themselves just based off of the odds. Plus 320 for Utah at DraftKings, 3-1 here at Circa. Kansas State plus 380 at DraftKings. They're a little higher at Circa at plus 425. When you did your deep dive and your analysis, did you find that that was accurate, that those were, based off of what you gathered, the two best teams, or was there a gap between Utah and Kansas State? How did you kind of decipher 1, 2, 3 in your breakdown?
Yeah, so I do think that there's a gap between Utah and Kansas State, and I think a lot of it has to do with what you have coming back for Utah. I mean, you look at this team defensively across the board, this is one of the best defensive teams in the country last year. In fact, I think it's a team that last year had no business going 8-5, right, considering how bad their quarterback play was. But a lot of it had to do with them defensively, Tim. So you bring 9 guys back from a defense, 11th in the country in opponent expected points added per play. That is going to be the best defense in the Big 12 by a mile. And when you have that, when you have a quarterback coming back, yes, from injury, but a quarterback the level of Cam Rising, who comes in, the last time for your audience who maybe doesn't remember, or at least just doesn't remember some of the numbers, in 2022, he was the fourth best PFF offensive grade in the Pac-12 among fellow quarterbacks. He threw for 3,030 yards, ran for another 500, was responsible for 32 total touchdowns. He is old as hell, and he's going to be...
seventh season, right, of college football.
And so, like, he's just a known commodity, and it's a very good one. So I think when you have those two factors, a quarterback with the history of Cam Rising, a defense with the consistency and the returning production that Kyle Whittingham has, that puts you above everybody else. And as far as Kansas State's concerned, I understand why they're the second choice. But for me, it's all based, and I think for everybody, it's based on potential,
yeah,
right? I mean, Avery Johnson, we don't know that much about. We did see him a little bit. It's a small sample size. But it's just that there's a reality behind an offensive line that misses about 3 or 4 pieces from last year, where he kind of... maybe he's not as a struggle, but doesn't reach the expectations that the market has set for him. I mean, this is a team that's got a win total of 9.5, the second choice to win their conference, and what is he now to win the Heisman? I mean, I haven't checked for a while, but he's one of the short shots,
around,
right?
25-1, somewhere in that ballpark. He was definitely a guy that was getting a lot of buzz. You know, I walked past him. I didn't talk to him at Big 12 Media Days, but he's a big dude and athletic guy. But yeah, 25-1 to win the Heisman Trophy does seem a little, in my opinion, a little rich.
Right. So, like, I put all those together, and that's why I'm kind of, I guess you could use the term down on Kansas State, but I'm skeptical when it comes to Kansas State. So I understand that being the 1-2, but for my money, after going through all of these teams, the team that I kept coming back to as the here's the value play, the team that we're not getting enough credit for, it is Iowa State. I think when you look at what Iowa State brings back, 19 total returning starters, amongst them a starting quarterback in Rocco Becht, redshirt sophomore who last year fifth best by PFF standards in the conference in terms of passing grade. He was tied for third in turnover-worthy play rate, so third being the third lowest amongst these quarterbacks. He's got his entire offensive line back. He's got his top two receivers back. He's got so much returning production. Also, by the way, Abusama's pretty good, right, at 7th row with 3 yards per carry. At 10-1 or better, for me, when I got done with this conference, that's the team that I landed on when we use the V word value. It is the Cyclones for me.
Yeah, it's fun to look at the differences, and I didn't do every book, but I like to compare DraftKings to Circa and where they are from the futures standpoint and win totals as well. And you mentioned Iowa State, plus 950 at DraftKings, mm-hmm. plus 650 here at Circa. So a little bit of a difference there. We could get to some of the teams that are on the flip of that, where shorter odds at DraftKings. But yeah, Iowa State, and we had Phil Steele on the podcast a couple weeks back, and he was very bullish. He's bullish on the whole state of Iowa, by the way. He loves Iowa and Iowa State, and their win total sits at 7.5. So to lump up those three for you, I know Rocco Beck, someone that you have a long shot on the Heisman. Win total sits at 7.5. DraftKings, you can get $1.20 to the over. Utah, 9.5, minus 155 to the over. And then it sounds like you would look Kansas State under 9.5, which is available at DraftKings at minus 150. Of those three, which one would you potentially play as, you know, we're 10 days away from the start of the season?
For me, it's definitely Iowa State. I think when you look at their schedule and the way it breaks down, the fact that you don't play the two big boys until later, right at Utah on the 23rd of November, yep, last game of the season is Kansas State. You get them at home. And the schedule before that is very, very manageable. They are going to be in a tough one on the road against Iowa in the, as you know, I call it the stupidly named Cy-Hawk Bowl.
But very creative. Come on now, JVT.
But that's an opportunity to potentially catch Iowa as they're implementing a new offense, yep, and get a pretty big win. But then after that, Arkansas State at Houston, Baylor at West Virginia, UCF, you know, we can talk about them and my thoughts on yep, UCF. Steve McKinnon, though, and our guide, projects it to be about an 8-point spread in favor of Iowa State at home, so we'll see if there's some truth to that. Regardless, they'll be favored. Texas Tech at Kansas, who knows what Kansas is at that point, and then Cincinnati
and I'll
home.
Point this out real quickly, yep, about the Kansas game. It's at Arrowhead Stadium, yep, and I talked to Chris Williams from Cyclone Fanatic, and he said it's going to be an Iowa State crowd.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
the Iowa State, and what, you know, whatever you think about home field advantage, but college, I bake it in a little bit more than the pros, and the fact that this is going to be at an NFL, yep, stadium and Iowa State, that those, you know, you I think you went to the Iowa State UNLV game, man.
They, I did, yes,
they came to this town and took it over.
Yes, yes, they did, very much so. So, no, like the whole point for me with Iowa State, and we, you know, we have these conversations in general about win totals anyway, which is if you believe a team can go over a win total, look to play some alternates, because generally you're not going to fall really in line with what that number is if you surpass it or go under it. And I think that's the case for Iowa State. I think this can be a 10-win team and a conference champion.
So a team that got probably the most action, at least movement from the futures odds, was Oklahoma State. And they bring back a ton from a team that made it to the Big 12 championship just a year ago, won 10 games, if you include their bowl win over Texas A&M. And, you know, Mike Gundy, another year for him. Ali Gordon was the Doak Walker Award winner, ran into some off-field troubles, and Mike Gundy's not going to suspend him. You know, whatever, right, whatever you want to make of that, that's what's happening. They open up against South Dakota State, an FCS team, but a very good one, reigning national champion, but still a 9.5-point favorite there. So right out of the chute, kind of the inverse of what Iowa State's schedule is, where they play Utah and Kansas State, bang, bang, they're September 21st and September 28th. They also get TCU on the road a little bit later, a team that I'm curious about. But you look at, who are the weaker teams that you get to play? They get to play BYU. They get to play Arizona State. They wrap up the season against Colorado. Win total for Okie State, 8.5 at Circa, 8 at DraftKings, and odds have drifted all the way down to plus 650 at Circa, plus 750 on DraftKings. A lot of buzz for the Pokes this offseason. Are you in on the Pokes this year?
I don't get it, man. I really don't. Like, I understand when you look at a team that won 10 games last year and is bringing back 19 guys, but I think you can look back at last year and really poke some holes in Oklahoma State's resume and just in general. I mean, for me, it starts with the defense, right? A lot of people look at that and go, you get 9 starters coming back on defense. This should be something that's really good. But some of the numbers, Tim, that really stick out to me. They were 82nd in opponent EPA per play. They were 107th in opponent expected points added per dropback. They were 121st in the country in opponent yards per play at just about 6.5, 6.48, if you want to be specific. You're returning every piece from a defense that across the board was insanely below average.
Yeah.
So why am I supposed to expect, even if they improve, that you reach average with a team that is kind of old when you talk about what they're doing defensively with their returning pieces? And then you get to the offense. You mentioned what you have at running back. Everybody knows it all starts with Ali Gordon. But quarterback, the most important position, Alan Bowman is not Cam Rising. He is a million years old, just like Cam Rising. But when you look at the ability to be explosive, to be efficient, 15 touchdowns to 14 interceptions. He was 8th in the conference at PFF passing grade among qualified quarterbacks. He committed the most turnover-worthy plays at 22. So not only do I use this in baseball all the time, right? Like, if you're going to walk a lot of guys, at least if you strike them out, you can balance that out. if you're going to throw a lot of interceptions, put the ball in danger, at least give me a lot of touchdowns and yards. And that's not what's happening here with Bowman. He's just putting the ball in danger. So, or to keep the baseball thing going, you know, he's just walking guys, putting them on base, and he's not striking them out. I just don't think that there's a lot here that I'm going to love. I think that Oklahoma State echoes a lot of the teams in this conference, which is a team that I think is going to be in a lot of coin flip shootouts. And I don't know if there's consistency there enough for me to buy in at some of the short numbers that are out there. So I was very much skeptical of Oklahoma State and the love for them, especially when I started to get into some of the numbers with them defensively.
So another team that's getting a lot of love, and you mentioned them already, and based off of the odds, they are the fifth shot, and actually at DraftKings, the fourth shot, and that's UCF. I have taken a long shot flyer on UCF and KJ Jefferson to win the Heisman. We talked about that when you and I were filling in on Follow the Money during the All-Star Week there on VSiN, but I look at this team, and I don't have an over bet on their win total. I think the ceiling is high, mm-hmm. but I think you would agree that the floor is relatively low, knowing their defense. They do have to play Florida in the non-con, which I think should be a pretty big challenge, and maybe people are a little too low on Florida. Yep. I'm excited about what this offense can certainly bring when you add Penny Boone from the MAC to R.J. Harvey, K.J. Jefferson. You've heard me say it before. Gus Malzahn compared him to Cam Newton when he was able to coach him back in 2010. So win total sits at 7.5 for the Knights, 9-1 to win this conference. Where are you on UCF?
I mean, I get that. But one of my favorite stats that I looked about K.J. Jefferson, he averaged 4.5 yards per carry after contact.
He's a load,
Arkansas.
Man.
Yeah, man, he's a load. He's huge. He's awesome. So think about that. You make contact with him, and he still adds an extra 4.5-5 yards. Like, that's insane. So I think, and I'll get the positive out of the way first, I think this offense is going to be everything we expect it to be.
Yeah.
I think K.J. Jefferson fits nicely with what they want to do there. He was, I think, very underrated in his time at Arkansas. He ran for 2,400 yards in his 3 years there. He's a really solid passer, 64 touchdowns, a 17 interception in his time there. Turnover worthy play rate of just 3.6%. Like, there's a lot you like about K.J. Mm-hmm. Jefferson. You mentioned all the pieces in the scheme. I totally get it. But a lot of these teams, I think, are very similar with one another in that when you go and look through these teams, one of the reasons why this league is the way it is because there's a lot of really bad defenses, and UCF is one of those groups. You bring back 8 starters from a group that was 105th in overall opponent EPA per play. They were 125th against the run. Opponents added 5 yards per carry and 5.8 yards per play against them. Is that improving? I mean, you've brought in a new defensive coordinator. You've got a little bit of help there. Regardless, I don't know how much that is improving to the point where, again, when you're talking about winning, some of these, we'll call them coin flip spots, because if you're going to be poor defensively in this conference, you're going to be in those situations. And you look at their schedule. Colorado is going to be a very good offensive team. Iowa State, who I just mentioned, you have to go there. Arizona, West Virginia, Utah. Those are spots where you could realistically slip up if you're not going to be on your P's and Q's defensively, which is why I have the same skepticism when it comes to this team and what they can do in terms of winning the conference and going over that win total.
The Utah game, I think, is really fascinating because, as you mentioned, Cam Rising is as old as dirt, and you've got a lot of older players. If Utah has a spot in the Big 12 championship locked up, do we get the sure. dreaded load management situation there for a short week, busy travel to go down to Orlando?
But I'd also, I think with the load management thing, what's kind of going to be interesting is it's, and you correct me if I'm wrong because you would know this, it is the highest, the four byes are the highest ranked conference champions, correct?
Yes.
So if you're pushing for that, mm-hmm. you don't want to take losses.
That's true.
So you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know if you're going to be in that situation.
You could decipher it out, and we're getting real nitpicky. Like, are they going to be 6 spots behind the ACC champion, and are they way ahead of the G5 champion? Yes. And that's something to know that people aren't recognizing. I don't think there's a G5 team that could take it, but it's the top 4 conference champions. If it is a G5 team, if Boise State or Memphis is ranked higher than the Big 12 champion, they get the bye.
Correct.
So that's something that people don't. It's not the 4 Power 5s, Power 4s, excuse me. It could be the Group of 5 team. That's unlikely, but it's possible.
That's why I think, unless you're like, it's clearly obvious, right?
Yeah,
like
if you're 11-0, yes. maybe you do that. But I think it's just something that now that we have to think about.
Like, if
probably
got,
not going to happen.
If they got like 4 losses and they're locked in the Big 12 championship, maybe that's where you start to talk about rest. But seeding does matter, ranking does matter. But you're right. And look, you mentioned them too. Like, for UCF, again, and what the schedule looks like, 2 sneaky spots. You got to go on the road to TCU and to Florida.
Yep.
And sandwiched in between, there's a home game against Colorado. So, like, I think that's going to be really interesting. Now, there's a bye between TCU and Colorado, but still, like, this is something where this UCF team is going to find itself facing a, or excuse me, UCF team is going to find itself facing a lot of good offenses. And I don't know if I trust them yet to do this consistently.
All right, let's get to it, because everybody, maybe not as much as last year, but everyone wants to know about Colorado. Right now, DraftKings 28-1, circa 27-1 to win the Big 12. Win total sits at 5.5. You and I were on VSiN Primetime last Tuesday, and the win total actually got to 6 at circa. And I know Brad Powers, when he was on our program, said he was hammering under 6 as much as possible, and that 6 is now gone. But it's heavily juiced to the over, minus $1.55 over at circa 5.5, minus $1.35 over at DraftKings. We know about Shedeur Sanders. He's a pro prospect at quarterback. We know about Travis Hunter. Could be, you know, a top five type of player, whether it be defensive back or wide receiver. So there's a lot of skill position players that you're intrigued by.
Yep.
But JVT, you have to worry about the line of scrimmage and the depth of this Colorado team. And lastly, before I get your thoughts on it, look at this schedule, man. Where's Houston? Where's Arizona State? Where is BYU? The three worst teams in most people's eyes are not on this schedule. They have to play Utah. They have to play Kansas State. They just don't have really many layups. Maybe Cincinnati, if you want to say, on October 26th. Sure. But, man, that Big 12 slate is not easy. Oh, by the way, you got to go to Nebraska. You got to play your cross-state rival in Colorado State, who we know is going to be fired up for that game. This schedule, man, it doesn't feel like there's any layups. Maybe Baylor, September 21st. I don't know.
I mean, maybe. I'm kind of in the thought of, I think Baylor could be at least better than what people think they're going to be. So I agree with you. Like, I don't think there's really any let-up. And Cincinnati's a team I bet their win total over. So I do think that they're going to be better than most expect. But I think this just boils down to the two things that you mentioned already. And I'll say, like, they did the right thing in they have rebuilt this entire offensive line. Only one starter's back from the offensive line, and it's not like they all moved on to the NFL. They're all at different spots. Yeah. They're not going to be starting. And Deion Sanders did a great thing. And you see this from time to time in football. You know, the Bills did this a few years ago where it was like, let's just throw bodies at the problem and see what comes out, and our offensive line should be better. And Shedeur Sanders should be better. A lot of the pressure was pressure invited by Shedeur Sanders. And if he's going to be a first-round quarterback, as we expect him to be, he's got to improve in that regard. You would think that's going to be something they work on. So similarly, I don't think this is a team that you're going to be too worried about from an offensive standpoint. It's defensively, what is this going to look like for you? You gave up 6.3 yards per play, 4.7 yards per carry. Only two defenders, Travis Hunter and Shiloh Sanders, had a PFF defensive grade over 70 last year. And you bring 8 guys back from that group. Are you going to be better? Is it a scheme thing? Again, there's only so much upper momentum you can really have when it's just about bringing guys back and being better than what you were last year. And then you couple it in with the opponents that you're going to face. I don't think it would be surprising if this team was a bowl team, but I think you're talking like 6-6. Yeah. I don't think that this is a team, given how poor they've been defensively, that can realistically can come out on the right side of these coin flips and get to like 7 wins or 8 wins. Or I know some have, I think Ben Fox Reed tweeted out that there was a big bet on them to make the playoff.
No, thanks.
I don't think that you're going to be able to win enough of those games to get to that point.
Yeah, and that's why at the 6, I would have played under, but I missed it. And 5.5, I would actually stay off. Because I do think, I believe in bowl motivation. I know that Shedeur is going to the NFL and Travis Hunter is going to the NFL. But I think there will be decent motivation to try to get to 6 if they have the capabilities of doing so. Let's get to Kansas, a team that has exceeded expectations the last 2 years. Lance Leipold has really done a phenomenal job in his first 3 seasons. Coming from Buffalo prior to that, he was an absolute machine at UW. Whitewater winning national championship. So 2 years ago, this is a team that was able to get, you know, in the top 25, got off to that red hot start, started 5-0. I believe they hosted College Game Day, and then they started to play some really challenging games, ultimately beat Oklahoma State to get bowl eligible, and then they played that epic Liberty Bowl game where they lost in overtime to Arkansas. Last year, I talked about on the podcast, I was wondering if there would be regression. Yeah. There really wasn't. I mean, from a win-loss standpoint, they went 9-4. They won their bowl game. You game that you went to, saw them beat UNLV. My biggest question, I guess I have two. Number one is, how big of a loss will it be that Andy Koltynecki leaves to go to Penn State and Jeff Grimes comes in as their offensive coordinator? And then secondly, Jalen Daniels doesn't have that safety net, right? Jalen Daniels, an exciting athlete, but he gets injured all the time. I mean, he was preseason Big 12 player of the year 2 years ago, and he barely played last year, and Jason Bean stepped in and played really well. Jason Bean's in the NFL now. So what do you make of this Kansas team right now? Their odds to win the conference. Interesting to note the difference. DK plus 950, circa 12-1. Win total 8. Juice varies, minus $1.35 at DraftKings, minus 20 at circa.
Daniels, it's all about Daniels. Hey, look, and for any Kansas fans watching, I think we have an odd connection because of a Clippers fan, right?
Yeah.
And every year, it's just, hey, how good are the Clippers going to be? It's like, I don't know, how many games are Kawhi Leonard going to play? And that's exactly what it is, yeah. Right? And this last year, Kawhi Leonard played the most games in a Clipper uniform, and guess what? They looked pretty good for a while. But he eventually got unhealthy, and they lost to the playoffs for the first round. Same thing here. Daniels has played in 12 games over the last two seasons. But you mentioned the key point for Kansas. In the games he missed the last 2 years, they were 15-11 straight up, 15-10-1 against the spread. Why? Because Jason Bean is a good quarterback for the college ranks. Well, he's not there. And behind you are a former walk-on and a true freshman. That drop-off's going to be pretty stark. And I believe one of them is actually Colts GM's son, Frank Reichskin.
Ballard?
Yeah, Chris Ballard. Yeah, I don't know why I went Reich. Yeah.
Cole Ballard.
Yep, Chris Ballard's son. So, that's my big thing. If you can tell me Jalen Daniels is healthy, then I think the ceiling is the roof for this team. I mean, the schedule is not overtly daunting when you look at the teams that they're going to take on. You do got to go to Kansas State. You do have to take on West Virginia on the road. But outside of that, some of those games are manageable. You get TCU at home. You get Iowa State at home. You get Colorado at home. Or home, I'll put in air quotes. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's a schedule you can manage. If you tell me Jalen Daniels is starting all of those games, but I can't guarantee that in any way, shape, or form, because the rest of the team, like, there's stuff. Devin Neal is a really good running back in the secondary. There's some pretty good pieces that they have. Skill positions, you have your top two receivers back from last year. So you put all those together, you like it, but you just have to tell me that Daniels is going to be healthy, and that's not something you can guarantee. So I went under it just because history tells me Jalen Daniels is not going to be healthy.
The two home games in the non-con against whatever Lindenwood is, Children's Mercy Park, I believe that is the MLS stadium there in Kansas City, and they play UNLV there, which is actually going to be an ESPN game on September 13th, a Friday night. Then the other games will be at Arrowhead Stadium. Interesting note, Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, Kansas, Arrowhead in Kansas City, Missouri. Interesting note.
Okay.
All right. Arizona. This is a team that the odds, pretty different. Arizona's 11-1 at DraftKings to win the conference. Circa 16-1. Win total sits at 7.5. Even money to the over at Circa, which I think some people would find surprising, and then minus 115 to the over at DraftKings. And I'm really curious to get your thoughts on this Arizona team, because I would say early on in the preseason, JVT, I was a bit, I wouldn't say bullish, but I was a bit more in on Arizona. And as I heard you talk about them, as I read more about them, I'm like, you know, I'm a little more skeptical. Now, the eights are gone, unfortunately, right? I think some sharp guys came in and took the eights on the win total. You have a non-conference game against Kansas State on a Friday night. You have a bye week. Then you go to Utah. This is a team that obviously Jed Fish leaves as their head coach to go to Washington. Noah Fifita stays. McMillan, the stud wide receiver, stays. They went out in the portal. They got some pieces, some from San Jose State. They also added Krosky Merritt from New Mexico, who was a pretty big load there, ran for over 1,000 yards a year ago. There's a lot of positives, but I think, and maybe in your eyes, I don't put words in your mouth, maybe the negatives do slightly outweigh the positives.
Yeah, and for the audience who's listening to this, one of my favorite statistics, if you want to know how good Jacory Krosky-Merritt can be, New Mexico last year was the 11th ranked rushing offense by EPA standards in the country. Like, think about that. And that was just because of him. Like,
ridiculous.
Right, by an expected points added statistic, he had them as a top 10 rushing offense. That's how good he can be. But look, a lot of this for me comes down to, I'm not a big Brent Brennan guy, man. Like, I've watched a lot of Mountain West football. I think that he had a lot of good teams in which he very, very much underwhelmed with. His best year was the COVID year in which he went 7-1. He never had more than 8 wins in a season. And you look at some of the failings that he had with some pretty good teams. Like, everybody wants to get upset about 2023, where, you know, the algorithm comes in and decides the Mountain West championship game. That San Jose State team lost games that they should not have. They should not have sat there and failed. He's 0-3 in bowl games. games. So the famous Hawaii Bowl last year where
everyone was
right,
on him. Yeah.
Hey, you know, Shavon Cordero's back home, of
it's
course.
It's his return.
Right, fell flat on their face in that game. And I'm not a big Brent Brennan guy. And that's kind of my resistance here because I think Jed Fish, there's a lot of stuff about Jed Fish out there about maybe not being the best dude. I think you can kind of read between the lines because really nobody came with
By
him.
By the way, Arizona, if you're wondering, best ATS team in the country last year.
Correct.
11-3, I believe. 11-2.
And I don't know if Brennan's a guy that adds wins on the margins like a guy that Jed Fish can be. So that's where my resistance comes in. And it's also just a really daunting schedule for a dude that I don't think makes the best in-game decisions. You mentioned road games, K-State and Utah. Coming back home for some tough opponents like Colorado, West Virginia's going to be pretty interesting.
Got to go to the bounce house.
Correct. You got to go there. You got to go to TCU. That's for me where I kind of come back to and go, you know what? I think I'd rather go under because I think this team is going to regress a little bit. I think the things that Jed Fish did very well are not there anymore because he's not there. And I don't think Brent Brennan, a guy who has shown to be a pretty, I think, below average decision maker when it comes to coin flip spots, is not going to be able to maximize this roster as much as it can be. But it's a very good roster.
Yeah, and there should be four games that should be wins. And you look at the back half of the schedule. They get Houston and Arizona State at home, but you almost want those games to be on the road because if you're going to be a favorite, you'd rather those games be on the road. I want to run through next, kind of quickly go through these. We'll take a break and then get to the Mountain West. Where are you on TCU? TCU, by the way, 18-1 to win the at DraftKings, 20-1 at Circa. They fell on their face last year, a year removed of making it to the national championship game, a surprise to many, and then, of course, got blown out in said national championship game by Georgia. And they didn't even make a bowl last year. So is this a bounce-back type of season for the Horned Frogs? Win total at Circus, it's at 7. DraftKings is at 7.5. And I know a non-conference game week one that is seeing some opponent action. Stanford getting some money there on that Friday night, August 30th. They have to play SMU, and I believe it's called like the famous Skillet Bowl or Iron Skillet Bowl, something like that. The crosstown rivalry game, they were able to get that. SMU will be coming off a bye. So the non-con is a little tricky there for TCU. What do you make of this Horned Frog squad?
So to me, they're like the fly in the ointment. I think they could actually be a surprise representative of the Big 12 in the Big 12 championship game.
Okay.
When you look at what they can be now, a lot of it hinges on what Josh Hoover is going to be. He's, and as far as I've seen, expected to be the starting quarterback. I don't know if he's been officially named yet. But when you look at what he did last year, 62% completion, 7.4 yards per attempt, 13 touchdowns, turnover-worthy plays have to cut down. But one of the things you like in a pocket that was kept clean, one of the graded metrics there, he's actually one of the highest graded passers in the conference. So when things are on schedule, he can keep you on schedule, essentially. And one of the sneaky things about last year about TCU, they were kind of good on defense. They gave up just 4 yards to carry, 5.6 yards per play. They get 9 starters back from that group, so that's really going to help. And I think that this is a team that, when you look at their schedule, Tim, you mentioned the tricky nature of it, but some of the toughest opponents you're going to be able to host, Oklahoma State, Arizona, you have to go to Utah. But then the rest of your matchups on the road, Kansas, Baylor, Cincinnati, there's just some pretty winnable spots there if you're TCU. I think at like 18-1 or better, this is one, if you want to go like medium to long shot in the Big 12, this is the team to do it. Because if Hoover hits and this offense all of a sudden starts to take off, you've got a good enough defense and a schedule you can manage that you can find yourself at a Big 12 championship game with that ticket. And by the way, a note, it's not like last year where, like last year I had Oklahoma State in the middle of the season about like 12-1 to get to the Big 12 or to win the Big 12 championship. But you were never really going to be in a position to hedge that if they got there because Texas was going to be there and
right.
They were going to be massive underdogs. I don't think that would be the case here for TCU. If they get to a Big 12 championship game, I don't think Utah would be, by that point, such a big favorite if it's them. That would be an opportunity that you would not be able to do something with.
TCU 20-1 to win the championship at Circus, plus 650 at DraftKings to reach the Big 12 championship. All right, you mentioned it already. Cincinnati, a win total you have over. Right now, DraftKings, you can get a flat 5. You got to pay the price, $1.60 to the over, 5.5 here at Circa, minus 115 to the over. As always, look around and see if you can get the best price that is out there. But Scott Satterfield, year two, year one was a disaster. They won just 3 games. They lost to Miami of Ohio in the Victory Bell game. I think that's what that was called. I believe a best bet on this podcast was Miami plus the points there. But you're a little is bullish fair? You like Cincinnati over their win total.
Yeah.
All right. So why do you like the Bearcats to go over their win total?
It's pretty much their offense. One of my things that I really like when you talk about evaluating teams is how good is your offensive line. That's always the starting point outside of quarterback because it's one of the most important positions, if not the most important position, especially in college football where it's hard to get a cohesive and good offensive line. Well, all 5 starters are coming back along this offensive line. In that group, Luke Kendra is actually one of the best offensive linemen, some would say, in the country. When you look at his ability along the interior, So if you start there, you've got a really good running back coming back. Corey Kiner was a 1,000-yard rusher last year, 5.5 yards per carry. When you look at what they can be on the ground, I think there's some real potential there. You had a big quarterback battle in the offseason, but I think your offense can be pretty skilled. And it's also the schedule. I mean, you look at the schedule for this team, it's one that you can do something with, right? I mean, you're talking about playing Houston and Arizona State at home. You do have to go to Colorado. You get to play host to West Virginia. You get to play host to TCU. Mackinnon has these projections where, again, you talk about some of these home games, only 5.5-point underdog at home against West Virginia, only a 2-point underdog to TCU. I think that might be a little bit higher when we get there, considering what I feel about Cincinnati. But then you get some other manageable spots as well with Pitt, Miami, Ohio to start as well. So I think this team's got all the potential in the world, and especially if you can sneak out some of these upsets. Look, I don't think the world of Texas Tech. Again, questions about them defensively. Same thing that I brought up with UCF. Don't think you'd be surprised if you spring those. And then at Colorado, a team we've already talked about too. So I think there's plenty of opportunity for Cincinnati to get to bowl eligibility, spring an upset or two, and maybe even get up to 7 wins if everything goes right for them.
Good news. Dante Corleone has been cleared. He was cleared, I believe, when they were here in town for Big 12 Media Day. And they also announced that Brendan Sorsby, who is, I think, expected to be the starter, is indeed
Indiana transfer,
the
right?
starter. Yep. So before we wrap up here, I have one final question. But before I get to that, any other notes, best bets in this conference that we did not hit on yet?
I think we pretty much hit on all the big highlights. I'd say really quickly, I think you and I both agree that Houston's going to be really bad.
Under 2.5 conference win totals, baby.
Yeah. Like it seems
it's minus 140 at DraftKings.
It's going to be big picture. I think it's going to be in good hands, but I think they're going to be really, really bad. And I'd also say, as I kind of noted just really quickly, Baylor does have 18 guys coming back. Daquan Finn was announced as the starting quarterback, the Toledo transfer. He's a strong dual threat guy. It sounds like they're going to go a little bit more up-tempo. I don't think I'm rushing to bet Baylor over their win total, but a team that projects to be underdogs in every single one of their last few games, except for like one, maybe two, depending on where the TCU line is, I think they'd be a pretty feisty pick to be a good ATS squad.
Yeah.
If Dave Aranda kind of turns that around, I don't know if it saves his job, but I think that'd be the case. But I also think they're a little undervalued. And to give you one quick example of that, like Mackinnon, again, going off of his projections, at Houston, he has that as a pick. I think Baylor should probably be favored in that game on the road against Houston. I think they're better than that. So that gives me the idea that I think that there's some out there that are a little too low on Baylor from a power rating standpoint.
Baylor's the one team that I don't know what to do with, sure, because the start of the schedule, you get FCS Tarleton State at Utah Air Force, who we'll talk about on the other side of this break, at Colorado. Where are they from a mindset? Like, is Dave Aranda out of a job at that point, or does this team click? He's now taking over defensive play calling again. They bring in Jake Spavadal, who's, you know, done wonders as an offensive coordinator, whether it was at West Virginia or last year at Cal. So pretty fascinating there. I love this conference. I can't wait to watch this conference all year. Last question I have for you right now at DraftKings, it's moved more towards the under. I believe it opened around minus 20. Now it's minus 40. Big 12 over under 1.5 teams in the playoff, over or under 1.5?
Under. Yeah. I think it's a one bid lead.
I agree. That is where I stand as well. All right, more with JVT, the Mountain West, a conference that, oh boy, we love this conference quite a bit. We got some best bets in this conference. We will hit on those on the other side, as well as, don't forget about the Pac-2, Washington State and Oregon State. More to come after this break.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And we're back here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Please hit us with a 5-star review. We've had a bunch over the summer months, and we'll be back rolling it back as we always do once the season gets going. I think we'll have a quick Week 0 preview later this week. Adam Burke and Matt Eumanns give them some thoughts there. And then obviously when Week 1 rolls around, we'll get back into what we normally do. JVT does have a Week 1 best bet, which we'll get to in just a little bit. But JVT, you look at this conference, as I say the three letters of your name a million times. Boise State has moved to odds on to win this conference. Minus 110 at DraftKings, minus 120 at Circa. It didn't come as a surprise to us, and you gave a little impassioned plea to viewers out there that we'd been mentioning this for quite a while, but Malachi Nelson's not the starting quarterback, at least in week one. It's going to be Maddox Madsen, the holdover from last year. And Dirk Koetter, from all reports, big fan of Maddox Madsen. Mm-hmm. So he gets the starting nod. Let's start with the offense. Dirk Koetter takes over for, I believe, the third time as their offensive coordinator. Spencer Danielson, this is his first time as the full-time head coach of Boise State, which I think is important to note there. Tons of expectations. You're looking at a win total at circa 9.5, win total at DraftKings 9. Odds on, as mentioned, to win this conference. What do we expect from this offense? Talon Green takes his talents down to Arkansas.
I mean, I think it should be good because you have Ashton Dente, right? Like, that's it.
Is he going to get overworked?
That is my real question, because I think overall...
Because George Helani was pretty nice little 1-2. I know George Helani, if I remember correctly, didn't play the first half of the season last year. I think he dealt with some injuries. But regardless, that was my question, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's like, Ashton Dente's awesome. But is he going to be exhausted by, you know, San Diego State November 2nd?
Yeah, and I think I would agree with that. You're going to really expect a lot. Like, I don't know exactly how wide receiver Chris Marshall, former Texas A&M commit, is really doing and how that's going to really pan out. But I think when you look at it from the perspective of, hey, how is this offense going to look? It would be Maddox Madsen who has to really accelerate this team, because if he's not going to be very good, then Ashton Dente, who is awesome as all hell, is going to have a lot of bodies in that box he's going to have to work against. And I have my questions about Madsen. I mean, I know that by all accounts, like we were talking about it and we've got information off the air that Dirk Koetter really likes the kid.
Yep.
I think when you look at the overall numbers on the surface, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 8.9 yards per attempt, and the 158 dropbacks he had last year looks good. But for me, what sticks out, and you know me, Tim, 4.9%, that would be the turnover-worthy play rate. He had a game in which he committed 4 that was on the road against Fresno State, really puts the ball in danger quite a bit. Is that going to pop up again? Because if it is, and you look at the issues that Boise State has had in quarterback in the past few years, whether it's Talon Green, we'll throw out a name from the past, Hank Bachmeier,
sure,
right? Like, those are guys that put the ball in danger, and that has held this team back. And if Maddox Madsen is going to do that again, then all these teams are going to dare Ashton Dente to load up against eight-man boxes and say, can you do it? Maybe he can, but I think that's what ultimately holds him back.
You know, I mentioned this on VSiN Primetime, and I'll mention it here, and I don't know if it's a fair comparison, but I think there's some similarities. So as a Notre Dame fan, I remember when Brian Kelly left before the bowl game, which they ultimately lost to Oklahoma State, and everybody, all the players, you got to hire Marcus Freeman. He's the guy. And they did. And we'll see how it plays out. But year one, what happened? They went all in week one against Ohio State. They covered, played well. And everyone said, wow, this team's going to be good. They lost to Marshall the next week. Later in the season, they lost to Stanford. 2 games as double-digit favorites. And you're kind of learning on the fly. And we talked to BJ Raines from Bronco Nation News and Studio back in July. And I asked him about the pressure and the expectations. The expectations in Boise, man, are that this team's going to the playoff, right? The road is set. This team is going to the playoff. And if it's not the playoff, it's going to be deemed a disappointment. It's a lot of pressure on a dude who's in his first year as a full-time head coach in Spencer Danielson.
It's also a lot of pressure on a team that, frankly, was below average on defense last year by quite a bit. And this is what ultimately I boil this down to when it comes to the hype for Boise State that I don't understand. I understand that they're good. I understand that they're the favorite. But to be odds-on to win this conference, which is a lot of respect before a season begins, completely ignores the fact that this team defensively, 6.1 yards per play, 71st in opponent EPA per play, 82nd in opponent expected points added per play on early downs. The points per game that they allowed were the second most in the last 7 seasons. That's not great. And you bring that entire defense back. Maybe it improves, but by how much? And I very much, maybe this is somewhat hating, but I will do it. I will very much poke holes in the run at the end of the year. You beat New Mexico. You went on the road to Utah State, who was fine 6-6. I guess you wanted good for you. You blew them out. Air Force was a nightmare at the end of the year.
Fell apart.
Completely fell apart. And then UNLV, if you were following them, had a lot of troubling signs that they were about to fall apart defensively. And sure enough, by the way, UNLV ended up losing their last 3 games of the season. So you could see that coming from a mile away as well. And that came to fruition. So I think when you look at Boise State, I understand if you want to say they are the favorite to win the conference. But to put them at odds on That came after Jeff Tedford left.
Yes.
That doesn't, his absence doesn't shift the probability of Boise State winning this conference by that much. I think they're very overvalued coming into this year.
And fortunately for us, if you want to bet that and you're in Nevada, maybe you're coming to town for sign-up weekend, whatever it may be, you could bet the no on Boise State, minus 110 on the no here at Circa. So it is a true coin toss, them against the field. Let's get to Fresno State, because I've talked a lot about UNLV. I don't think I've talked a ton about Fresno State. They don't play Boise this year, which is good for them from a scheduling standpoint. They do have to go on the road to UNLV, and UNLV will come off a bye in that particular spot. Open up the year at Michigan. Then it's FCS, Sacramento State, New Mexico State, who is going to be, in my eyes, very down this year, and then at New Mexico. So a soft-ish start to the schedule. They wrap up the year at UCLA, but the big to do, right? You don't have Jeff Tedford anymore, who always kind of seemed to get the best out of you. And, you know, I talked to Johnny Avello at DraftKings and Jeff Benson at Circa, and they both adjusted the line in the futures market because of the absence of Jeff Tedford. So let's start there. I know you're a big numerical guy and like to work kind of from that standpoint. How much value did you put into the loss of Jeff Tedford now that Tim Skipper comes in to take over?
I mean, I think it's huge. I think it's hard to quantify anything.
Sure.
I mean, I think we had, was it Brad Powers that was on with us? I thought he made a great point, which was, look, when Nick Saban left.
Yep.
And was
Saban had COVID.
Yeah, COVID. Yeah, not left. And what was it? Maybe a, it even a point?
I think it moved a point, and then if I remember correctly, I think it moved back.
Correct. So, like, essentially what we're saying is, if Nick Saban doesn't affect an individual game win probability, like, in the big picture, Jeff Tedford's very good. Should it alter the fate of Fresno State by that much if he's not going to be there, if the pieces are in place? And I would argue that it doesn't, especially when you see what the market shift was. Like, I think it was pretty dramatic.
It was.
Yeah, after he left. So I think that when you have the pieces that you do, Mikey Keene, I don't think you can argue. I think it is a fact. He is the best quarterback in the Mountain West. Mikey Keene was great last year. 23 touchdowns. He had committed turnover-worthy plays on just 22.4% of his attempts, so takes care of the football, completed 67% of his passes. He's the best quarterback in the conference. So you have that. You have Malik Sherrod, who was a fringe 1,000-yard rusher, should be a 1,000-yard rusher this year, is going to be a double-digit touchdown scorer, is going to be very effective behind an offensive line that brings back quite a bit of talent along it, including Moses Vavile, I think is his name, who's a really good interior guard. So all over, this team has a lot offensively to keep this thing going. And by the way, in terms of the offensive line, the other thing that really helps Keene, he was only pressured on 22% of his dropbacks last year. He gets the ball out quick, and he's well protected. This offense should be really, really good. And I think that when you look at that, along with, you know, Tedford's been considered the quarterback whisperer, he had a year under Tedford. So I think when you look at everything combined, I don't think the loss of Tedford is worth as much as the market says it is.
So for those wondering, it was plus 350 when Mountain West Media Days took place on July 10th. It is currently, that was plus 350 at Circa. Right. It's currently 6-1. At Circa. So we've seen a decent shift there. Win total down to 7.5 at Circa. 8 is there at DraftKings.
Right, really quick, just for the audience too. 350 implied probability of 22.2%. 6-1, 14.3%. That's a dramatic difference for a coach just leaving.
I asked Jeff Benson, and he said, what was it? He goes, yes, we adjusted the numbers. He's important. So he kept it pretty simple. All right, let's get to another team that is very in that next tier, right? As Boise State, then it's a tier in the single digits, and that's UNLV. Well, it's Fresno State, and now UNLV. UNLV at DraftKings plus 550 and at Circa plus 650. This is a future that you do have in pocket. Fortunately, you got it before the Jeff Tedford news, so you got a much better number on it. A lot of pieces are coming back. You lose your quarterback, but I'm fascinated about what's going to happen at UNLV. And I know you doing local work here in Vegas, you might have a little bit more inside information, but you bring in two FCS guys, Haj Malik Williams from Campbell, and then Matthew Saluka from Holy Cross, who, you look at some of the games that he had, holy smokes, this dude has the ability to make some big, big plays. Play a couple of FBS teams out of the chute. Market's moving in their favor week one at Houston. It's down to 1.5 after opening around 3. They play Kansas. They do play Fresno State and Boise State, but they have both of them at home. So you're looking at a win total right now for UNLV at 7.5. Juice varying. Actually, at Circa, it's actually a flat 7. So you can get over 7 at minus $1.40. a team that exceeded all expectations last year. And now, as we talked to Barry Odom about it when he joined VSiN Primetime, hey, man, you got to play the no one respects us card. Can't do that anymore. Yep. I believe they're, what, number two in the Mountain West preseason poll.
Yeah, and I think that this team is going to be very good. As you mentioned, I bet them at 8-1 to win this conference when that number was available. Sounds like the scuttlebutt coming out of camp is that it's, I guess, a minor upset that Haj Malik Williams is in the driver's seat
really?
To start. And for those who don't know, Haj Malik Williams, 6'1", 205, left as the Campbell Camels, career-leading passer in passing yards, touchdowns. Last year was very, very good. School record 2,500 yards, 231 completions, 19 touchdowns, 70% completion. And he's a much better fit offensively, this might surprise some people, than Jaden Maiava, who left. Jaden Maiava was a very serviceable quarterback for them last year, but he put the ball in danger. He was not athletic, so there was not that dual threat capability that you're going to have with Haj Malik Williams and or Matt Sluka, whoever gets it. And by the way, one of the things that has been great, and like you said, I followed the program and whatnot, went to school there. One of the best kept secrets, even though he was just named the All-American team preseason, Ricky White is one of the best receivers in the country. He is awesome. He caught, he had, what, I think over 1,400 yards. He had touchdowns. They have an All-American special teamer and wide receiver as well in Jacob DeJesus. They have three starters back along the offensive line. This offense should be really, really effective. And it's a unique, you don't want to call it a gimmicky offense, but the go-go offense does create a lot of problems for a lot of different teams, as we saw. So I think this group on offense is going to be pretty special. And then defensively, what you like the most is, and if you remember, I brought this up with Barry Odom when he was in here, I asked him, I was like, hey, look, you gave a lot of big plays downfield last year. What do you think was the issue? What did you guys do? And he said a lot of it had to do with size, and they kind of revamped this secondary. They went out and got transfers from Arkansas, from Texas. Malik Chavis and Jalen Catalan come in. This is a group that is a lot better defensively, and I think when you look at all of that combined, I think that this team is going to be pretty dangerous when it comes to the Mountain West.
Just going back in our feed here, if you want to hear that chat with Barry Odom, it was on the July 12th edition covering the 2024 Mountain West Media Days. We had interviews with BJ Raines, who covers Boise State, Spencer Danielson, head coach of Boise State, Barry Odom, head coach of UNLV, Jay Norvell, head coach of Colorado State, Jay Sauvell of Wyoming, Timmy Chang of Hawaii, and Ken Niumatalolo of San Jose State. Who we didn't talk to was the head coach of Air Force. And Air Force is, and all service academies are always kind of tricky to handicap, at least from a preseason standpoint. Troy Calhoun's been there forever. He's been there for 18 years. He's never leaving. This is a team, according to Bill Conley, 134th out of 134 teams in returning production. But you look at what they've done. If you just look at the last four full seasons that we've had, removing the COVID year, 11 wins, 10 wins, 10 wins, 9 wins. Now, last year, JBT, as you pointed out, they got blown out by Army when they were 17th in the country. And after that, they lost to Hawaii, UNLV, and Boise State. They did win their bowl game against James Madison, albeit against the James Madison team that lost their head coach and a lot of key pieces there. So what do you make of this Air Force team? Win total for Air Force sits at 6.5 at DraftKings, 7 here at Circa, 11-1 to win this conference. This, I don't know how you did it, man. This is a challenging team to kind of figure out.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, honestly, like, you know, option attacks are always going to raise your floor as an offense, but when you only have two starters coming back on this group, it makes it really challenging. And one of, I think, the, it's not underrated, but one of the big things about Air Force this year is this offensive line, which was awesome the last two or three years, is completely gone. You had a group that 2 years ago, Tim, what's the award for the offensive lines?
Joe Moore Award.
Yeah, it was like a semifinalist for the Joe Moore Award like 2 years ago. This is a group that was very, very talented, and now you're just completely rebuilding it. And I get the scheme and Calhoun and what you've done, but when you look at everything, and your most experienced returner is Dylan Carlson, who ran for 493 yards in 2023, that's a little bit of an issue. And, you know, I think what helps him a little bit, which is kind of underrated, is your top three returners at receiver are back. And it's not even so much about the receiving yards. It's the ability as a wide receiver to block downfield and block along the perimeter. It's very important for an option attack. So that's going to be very good for them. But I look at just how much you've lost, and the market's just expectation that they're going to do it, like 6.5 the win total. And I just can't get there. I think Calhoun's going to be very good. And maybe it's part of the schedule, because you look at their schedule overall, it is pretty manageable when you're talking about San Jose State, I think Merrimack's part of it, Navy, Colorado State, Nevada.
Army.
Yeah, Army. Like, these are some winnable games. So maybe that's going to push them forward. But I have a hard time believing that this is a 7-8 win team. If you're going over 6.5, you're not saying just bowl eligible. You're talking about 7 or 8 wins, and I just don't know if that's the case for this
team. Yeah, no Boise, no UNLV, and they get to host Fresno State in altitude, which is always beneficial. Speaking of altitude, let's get to a team that you did take a long shot on to win this conference, and we also talked to their head coach, Jay Sauvel. First year for him as he takes over for the legend, Craig Bohl, and not expected to be too much drop-off because Jay Sauvel was on the staff. He was there for 4 years as their defensive coordinator, and I joked with him. I said, man, you look at your quarterback, Evan Svoboda, and he's wearing number 17, and there was a gentleman who wore number 17, and that was quite the good player. But one thing that is worrisome, and I'm double-checking this, Harrison Whaley, I believe, had knee surgery, so the concern there for their leading running back is certainly something to keep an eye on. This is from a little while back. Jay Sauvel said, quote, it didn't look good with the injury there as he got, a knee scope on his right knee. So how much does that affect how you look at this team, Harrison Whaley, who was, you know, a second-team all-conference player just a year ago?
Yeah, that's like the big blow that I don't really love, right, as somebody who bet them to win this conference. But when you look at the offensive line and how much comes back along that group, top four of your offensive linemen are back along, so that should really help bring some of these running backs along, including 13 All-Mountain West guard Jack Walsh. So that's really going to help. You mentioned Svoboda, the ability there. If you look at his last few games, ran for 65 yards, 2 touchdowns, 13 attempts in his 3 appearances last season, so that's really going to help him too. And while your top receivers are gone, you're going to be a team that relies on your ground game. So I think that you're going to be able to offset the losses at receiver if that's going to be the case. What gets me most excited about Wyoming is them defensively. Sauvel was their defensive coordinator the last 3 seasons, so there's going to be some continuity there. You have all these returning pieces for this group. You look about a team that 46th in opponent EPA per play, 30th in opponent EPA per rush, 5.2 yards per play. They're getting to play at home and against some of the big boys. Like you mentioned, you get to host Boise State. That's a very big matchup a little bit later in the schedule. And then you look at the road teams, Tim. San Jose State, New Mexico, Colorado State. Those aren't games that you're quaking in your boots about. And in fact, overall, the schedule as a whole, Arizona State, Idaho, BYU, North Texas, Air Force. Like, this is a team that could really, I think, rack up quite a few wins if they handle their stuff on offense. And Svoboda is what we expect him to be. So even with the loss of Whaley, I still think at about 14-1, given the price and what we've talked about with, I believe, to be a mispriced favorite at the top of the league, I think Wyoming is still worth it.
20-1 at Circa, so certainly something. And the knee scope, apparently. Yeah,
that's where I bet it, too. So
the knee scope went well, and we'll see if Harrison Whaley does come back at some point. By the way, if you're wondering, week one, Wyoming, as JVT alluded to, at Arizona State, and that number has come off the key of 7 and is now down at 6.5. You mentioned Colorado State. Let's get to them. A team that I bet over their win total a year ago was able to get there, but kind of fell apart a little bit.
Yep.
A bit fortunate, certainly, in their win over Boise State. Now, you could say they were unlucky in the Colorado game and some other spots as well. So this is a huge year for Jay Norvell. You know, he comes in from Nevada. It was a complete rebuild, 3-9 year one, 5-7. This team, I think they have to get to a bowl game this year. I don't know if he's on the hot seat, but they're expecting a bowl game this year. Torrey Horton is back for another year. He's an absolute stud there at wide receiver. And Dylan Goffney's back for another season. They do lose their stud tight end, Dallin Holker, who is it's going to be a big loss. Quarterback, I think, and I know you have some questions, Braden Fowler, Nicolosi, got some questions there. Yep. It feels like upside, but he's got to work on some things. Win total sits at 6, minus 45 to the over at DraftKings, 6.5 here at Circa, minus 25 to the under. What do you think of the Rams this year?
Yeah, I think bowl is a possibility, only because their schedule is really, really nice. I think when you look at their, I think amongst the big spots, we'll call them, where you're going to be a pretty sizable favorite and or able to win the games, Northern Colorado, UTEP, San Jose State, New Mexico, Air Force, Nevada, all of those teams are on your schedule. So you should be able to rattle off those victories. I think the problem is where you get to, if you're betting over like 6 at the win total, is where are you springing a couple of these other victories? Because I think Utah State is going to be better than people expect them to be. You have to play them at home. You go to Fresno State, as you mentioned, you get Wyoming at home. Those are going to be some tough opponents. At Oregon State is going to be a tricky spot too. And you mentioned the issues of Fowler Nicolosi. Turnover worthy play rate of 5%. It's really high. Are you going to cut those down? You're going to get better at that because you're going to keep putting the ball in danger. It's going to be a pretty big problem for you. So I think if you look at it based on the schedule, it does make a lot of sense. I think if you look at their defensive backfield, you have a lot of good pieces there. Henry Blackburn, Jack Howell should be very, very good. But I have a hard time. Like, I think six is like the firm cap for the team. Mm-hmm. So I have a really hard time, especially when the time we were writing it, I think it's six shaded to the over, if I remember correctly, on the win total. And laying a price on over six is, to me, where I kind of pump the brakes on what Colorado could be this year. I think it's a pretty firm ceiling on six wins.
Yeah, and you, once again, you can get under 6.5 and minus a dollar.
Okay,
minus 25 if you do like under Colorado State. A couple teams that are in action week zero that people will be curious about. We've talked about them a bit. It's a best bet when you were on the show on July 12th. Over 4.5 wins for Hawaii. I thought that was a great price that is out there. It's no longer there. It's now 5, minus 45 to the over. And even at circa, it's 5.5, minus 30 to the over. So there's a lot of love out there for Hawaii. We got a lot of love for Hawaii. We like Timmy Chang. He's jumped on the program a handful of times. And, you know, you look at their week one opponent, Delaware State, missed their flight today as we record this on Tuesday out to the island. So who knows what's going to happen there. A 38.5-point favorite in that one. The market's been nuts. In week one, when they play UCLA, it's moved from 18.5 at DraftKings now down to around 13 market wide. I was texting with Timmy Chang, and he'll be on the VSiN primetime, I believe, later this week. And he's just fired up about Braden Schrager. You know, this is a guy that with the run and shoot offense, you know, they were kind of like Colorado State with Jade Norvell. It was a full on rebuild when he took it over back in 2022. And then you look at the end of last year, JVT, they got blown out by Wyoming, but they were able to win outright three of their last four games. So it feels like despite not making a bowl last year, there was some momentum going into this year. However, with the positivity comes the negative, and that Stephen McBride, their leading wide receiver, not listed on the depth chart for week zero, and we don't know how long he'll be out. He had an off-field issue that led to an arrest. I believe there might be some other stuff going on, so we don't know what the availability is of Stephen McBride, their returning leading receiver from a year ago.
Yeah, but I think one of the big positives, as you alluded to, is if you're making an argument for anybody not being the best quarterback or Mikey Keene not being the best quarterback in the Mountain West, you're probably going Braden Schrager. So that's going to be really helpful here. Schrager's awesome. Very good deep fall passer among quarterbacks in the Mountain West. Completed the most passes or 20 more yards downfield. So this is a team that's going to be very explosive, even with the questions about McBride and what they're going to do offensively. I think one of the things you'd be worried about, because you said you bet over 4.5, right?
4.5, yes.
Yeah, to me, it's similar to Colorado State, where I feel like 5 is a pretty firm cap on what the year might be. Because you talk about the winnable games, the Delaware State game, Sam Houston, Northern Iowa, Nevada, New Mexico. Everywhere else, where are you going to find that victory? It's San Diego State, maybe. You're on the road.
Yeah.
Maybe if UNLV is not as good as we expect them to be, and they're coming out there, and it is a low-key big rivalry spot.
Yep.
They play for the Golden Pineapple or whatever the hell they play for. So, and I look, I was UNLV's last road trip out there. I was on it with the team, and I watched them go out there and lose that game as a favorite. So I've seen that. I've seen crazier things have happened before. But it feels somewhat firm for like 5. But I'd say either way, if Shager's going to be as good as we expect him to, and Timmy Chang is as excited as he is about how this team is going to be defensively, especially on the back end, I wouldn't be surprised to see them surpass 5 and get to a bowl. But they are going to be, I think, a very good team. And at some of these spots, market would agree too, right? Catcher points against UCLA, catcher points against Boise State at home, catcher points against UNLV at home. They will be, I think, a very good ATS team this year.
Defensive coordinator Dennis Thurman, he comes in from Jackson State, where he was. All right. To wrap it up here with the Mountain West, there's been a handful of teams we haven't touched on. You've got a best bet. We can mention week zero here as well. But any other notes that you would pass along, whether it be a win total look or just something to note regarding this conference? San Diego State, I'll mention this, going to look a lot different. Right. I don't know year one, but Sean Lewis comes in after they have been playing at a snail's pace for it feels like ever. And now Sean Lewis, the creator of Flash Fast when he was the coach at Kent State, was unceremoniously demoted a year ago when he was the offensive coordinator at Colorado. Very, very fascinated to see what San Diego State looks like this year. But I haven't messed with anything from a win total perspective there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Very interested to see what it's going to look like, especially just with a brand new offense. And with so much, I even put in the guide, like with so much change, it's hard to kind of really predict what this is going to be. And you look at the schedule, like you avoid Fresno State. You got to make trips, though, to Boise State, Wyoming, UNLV, non-conference opponents, Oregon State, Washington State at home. There's some challenges there in that schedule that I think are going to make them fall. And I say this really quick, Tim. Of all the win totals I was really surprised by, and this moved on me quick, and if it's still out there, maybe you can shop around. I was really surprised the market opened 5 for San Jose State on the win total. I mean, betting that over to say San Jose State, Kenny Amatalolo's team is going to be a bowl team this year, I think it's really, really surprising. This team is going to be pretty bad. They only have 7 guys coming back. It's not a lot of returning production, and even the guys that are coming back are not particularly great. I think it's going to be a rough year for them. So under 5, I think, is very much worth playing, even laying like a pretty hefty price. I think that's be worth paying a premium on under 5.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. San Jose State at DraftKings is 4.5 minus 20 right now, and I'm pulling up right now what they stand. But, you know, just full disclosure, I'm a big Kenny Amatalolo guy. I got to cover him for many years when he was at Navy. But, yeah, this is a complete culture shock. They're not going to run the triple option. Do not think that they will be running the triple option, but I'd be curious to see what they do week 1, even against Sacramento State. Also, same price, 4.5 juiced under. So, yeah, you have seen the market move on San Jose State. All right, before we get to the Oregon State, Washington State, lovely Pac-2, you have a best bet, and it's a hold-your-nose special, week 0. Right now at the Westgate Superbook, you can get New Mexico as an 11.5-point underdog to Montana State. So the FCS team is a 11.5-point favorite. I believe Brad Power said this would be the biggest line ever for an FCS team. So he said Montana State would be the largest FCS favorite ever versus an FBS school if 10.5 holds, and it's now up to 11.5.
Smart one-way action. I mean, I disagree with that. I bet 10.5, so I'll tell you today, I'd take 11.5. I just think that with Dampier, a quarterback, he's a pretty good athlete, didn't turn the ball over, has some dual threat ability, a defense that's got 6 guys coming back that is going to run a similar scheme with Bronco Mendenhall there. I think it's the worst thing in the world to at least expect this team to be a little bit better, especially when you're talking about one-way action. I mean, there is no stop on this number. So I took 10.5. Obviously, I would say 11.5, anything up, I think is worth taking a stab at with New Mexico. That's pretty surprising.
All right, let's wrap on this. Oregon State and Washington State, both their win totals sit at 7.5. Oregon State, look, I did the sidelines of their bowl game and they played Notre Dame, and they were a skeleton crew. And it was a tough offseason for them with all the pieces that they lost. Aiden Childs, their exciting young quarterback, he goes with Jonathan Smith to Michigan State. Damian Martinez, I believe he was a spring transfer, if I remember correctly, to Miami. Just a ton of pieces gone. Silas Bolden, if I remember correctly, I think he went to Texas. I'll double check that. DJ Uiagalelei, he goes to Florida State. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Let's start with Oregon State. Trent Bray takes over as their head coach. He had been on the staff. He's an Oregon State alum. You know, from a schedule standpoint, it gets easier, right? Because you're not playing the Pac-12 anymore, except Washington State. You do have to play Oregon. What do you make of this Oregon State team right now? Depending on where you look, DraftKings minus 30 to the under, circa minus 45 under 7.5.
I'm surprised. I think there's an interesting dynamic at play where I think the market sees, because for those who don't know, they are playing essentially a Mountain West schedule, but they're not going to count toward conference games.
7 Mountain West games and Washington State.
I think there is this thought that these Pac-2 teams are still a level above the Mountain West, and that's why their win totals are so high. I mean, you're talking about an Oregon State squad that brings 5 starters back, only 1 starter back defensively, and is a 7.5 win total. I think the market's really undervaluing the Mountain West as a whole and how challenging this schedule might be for Oregon State when you look at some of the opponents they have to face. Now, the road games aren't particularly daunting, but playing host to UNLV is a sneaky, tough spot. You have to go to Boise State. You got to obviously play your other Pac-2 opponent in Washington State. I think that's going to be something that's going to be pretty challenging. And then you mentioned the other spots that you have on the schedule, including the Oregon game. For me, it would be under, in fact, on both teams is what I did with these schedules, because I do think that the Mountain West is better than the market is giving them credit for. And I think when you look at the immense turnover that both teams are facing, I don't think that this is going to be a team that's going to be floating around 8 or 9 wins and just being able to beat up on a Mountain West schedule.
By the way, there was a report out there 2 days ago that Ben Gulbranson is expected to be the starter. He started the bowl game. He's been with the team forever. And Javonnie McCoy was the transfer from Idaho. I think they have a youngster in Jabari Johnson at quarterback. So feels like there's a lot of uncertainty at the quarterback position. And then Washington State, they do have continuity, at least from the coaching standpoint. Jake Dickert comes back. By the way, if you're wondering, per Bill Conley, SP Plus, 132nd is where Oregon State ranks in returning production. Washington State is at 91. They bring in a FCS transfer as well, Zevi Eckhouse from Bryant. Also 7.5 win total there for the Cougs, and they also have to play their cross-state rival. However, I would rather play Washington than Oregon if I had to make a selection there. So Washington State, 7.5 for them as well. The juice is -110 both ways at Circa, and it's even money to the under, -120 to the over at DraftKings.
To me, it's under. You look at, again, what they're bringing back defensively, only four guys coming back for a group that was not particularly good last year. There's going to be a lot of turnover there. And when you look at what originally was a win total, 7.5 shaded to the over, Tim, Texas Tech, Washington, two road trips, Boise State, Fresno State, at San Diego State, at Oregon State. You get home games against Utah State and Wyoming, two teams that I think are going to be particularly good. I think, again, when you read what the market expects of this team, I think they just believe that Washington State, because it's a former power conference, is just a level above what their conference schedule, I'll put in air quotes, is. But look at the, to me, even though there's a bye week sandwiched in there, consecutive road games against Boise State and Fresno State before you host Hawaii? Dude, that's a tough stretch for this team. These are two conference championship contenders in the Mountain West. I think this team's going to be up for it. And then, of course, on the road at the end of the season, after you take on Oregon State, which I'm assuming is going to be some sort of charge spot because it's your only conference opponent, then you come back home for Wyoming, which is going to be pretty tough too. So I think under 7.5 as well. Maybe I'm a little too low, and both of these teams are too high on the conference that I follow, but I think both teams are very much looks to the under.
And remember, keep this in mind, all Oregon State and Washington State home games can be found on the CW.
Right.
That's JVT. You can follow him on Twitter at MeJVT. Of course, hear him with me weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and read all of his work in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, the Big 12, the Mountain West, as well as those Pac 2. I'm Tim Murray. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back later this week with a Week 0 preview, hoping to get Adam Burke and Matt Newman's on to discuss the four games on that Week 0 slate. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.